You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim is off tonight. He's off tomorrow night, and he'll be back on Monday. And bringing with him his own usual brand of chaos. It's always super fun to listen to. In the meantime, lots to talk about. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about Canadian history with Craig Baird. He's got some really interesting topics. We're going to talk about a jockey who rode Seabiscuit, and Seabiscuit, the famous racehorse, to victory. And we'll find the Canadian connection there. We'll talk about how Ontario got its name and the sinking of the Empress of Ireland and lots more. We'll also talk with David Cooper as he ruins the show. David's always a lot of fun, and he'll be here from New York City in just a little while. Up first, though, my guest is Bill King. Writer, broadcaster, musician, photographer. You know him if you've listened to the iHeartRadio network for a long time. You've certainly heard him play. You've heard him speak. And Bill, it's a pleasure to bring you on the show tonight. How are you?
It's great to be with you, Richard. Always.
So you have written an article called Here's to You, Tina and Celine, the Greatest Generation for FYI Music News. And it's an obituary of sorts for Tina Turner, who we lost last week. And you talk about Celine Dion. She has stiff person's syndrome. But you're talking about something a bit larger than just the loss of those two artists. Celine, of course, still with us, but she says she won't be touring again. And let's talk about what you're trying to get at in this article. The idea that people don't come up in the same way as they used to, and perhaps that means that there isn't the richness in their voice. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Well, sort of that, but I was thinking about the fact that we sort of came up in a generation where we had singers who just had, that were dynamic in such a way that they affected us, and they had long careers. And as I said, the songs that they put out were the long stretch, like the Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You. It's a masterpiece, right? The same way the Linda Ronstadt. Linda's got MS, and we're losing her. Yeah. But the songs of Linda Ronstadt, Donna Summers, Roberta Flack, Eva Cassidy, and these artists. I'm just thinking about the female artists. And we don't really have the performance situations that they had, and also the ability to show your voice, because much of what's being done now is loops, and it's cut and paste. It's also toying with the voice in such a way where you don't really get the opportunity to stretch, because most of it is laptop driven or, a little in-house studio. So it's the voice becomes part of the arrangement, and it's not something that's stand up like Aretha just takes something and it soars,
And I mean, I think that there are some exceptions to that rule. I would say Adele, yes. I would say Florence and the Machine. But is it so much, or is it more about a shifting in audiences' tastes, or is it more about just that people don't come up the same way that they used to?
Yeah, I don't think they have the same opportunities because there's just too many people.
Yeah.
As I say in the article, the big stretch is in the church. It's in the artists in the church. Tamla Mann, Tasha Cobbs-Leonard, Karen Hawthorne, Karen Clark Sheard. Those are magnificent voices that if they had crossed over into pop, they would be in Aretha territory. They would be in the same territory if they had taken on that world. Adele is a great singer, but Adele is not Aretha, and she's not Whitney. So these are singers of our time, but their songs are not the kind of songs that are showcase songs. I was thinking about that, watching the movie on Whitney Houston the other night. Caught me about that was Ricky Minor did an arrangement, and they talk about it in the movie, of I Love You, Porgy Bess, You Are My Woman, Am I Telling You, I'm Not Going, and I Have Nothing. And it was for American Music Awards, and it was 9 minutes. And my goodness gracious, that's 1994. You will not see that kind of performance again. So, or the same way with Aretha Nessun-Dorma, right, where she took came in for the Pavarotti and subbed in and put on a performance of a lifetime. Those are at a level that we don't see or we will not witness for a long, long time.
I'm speaking with Bill King, writer, broadcaster, musician, photographer, written an article called Here's to You, Tina and Celine, the Greatest Generation for FYI Music News. Is auto-tune the worst thing that happened to the music business in the last 20 years?
It's what it is. You know something, because singers can get away with a lot. You know, there's the pitch bending that's in so many songs, which you could go around the whole world right now. You could be in Nigeria or you could be in Korea and they're doing the same music. It's the same everywhere you go. And so if I'm going to find great music, if I'm going to go to Nigeria, I'm going to step back in time.
Right.
I'm going to go back to the things that were the kind of Nigerian music that made the country, the same way in Barbados. And if I want to go to St. Lucia, if I want to go to places in the world, I sort of step back and find about the artists that preceded this generation of those who are manipulated. And it's only going to get worse with AI, you know, so it's going to be tough. Richard,
you talk about laptops, you know, and their the integral nature of them in making music. Now you talk about, you know, how it is pre-programmed, pre-packaged. I think when I listen to older records, I think it's the imperfections that often make the records great. I think it is the little mistakes, the off-the-cuff moments, things that seem to be programmed out of music now that often make the records that I love sound better, distinctive, and memorable.
And you're right, because it's about the performance, not about the initial results on imperfection. It's not about perfecting a track. And this is when the tracks get rounded off now.
Yeah.
They don't have the edge. They don't have the flaws or the things that are the accidents in music. There's no accidents.
Yeah.
And, you know, in doing a great performance, you have to throw yourself out there and you have to step beyond what you usually do and go into a region of your brain and body that's uninhibited and be ready to fail. But what comes on the other side of this is this amazing things. You know, it's like going for the note. It's going for a note, going for an expression, or something in the phrase where you twist the phrase or bend it in such a way, and all of a sudden, everybody that's listening on the other end gets chills. Something happens to them physically, you know?
You were Janis Joplin's musical director for a while. Tell me a little bit about her, because I love her voice. I don't know that, you know, you would say that she was a trained singer. Maybe she was. I don't know. But she had a rawness to her that I really liked that to me gave her so much personality. What was it like to play with her?
You know, what was great was when I got with her, we first sat down and we listened to a bunch of Stax records, right? Memphis Sound. She was really into this Memphis sound, and she wanted to sort of step into that zone where Carla Thomas was and the greats and Otis Redding, because that was the music that got her. And we sit down, I gave her a tune of mine, and she sang that tune and did a beautiful job of it. And we sit there and listen to different music. And then after that, I heard the music that she did prior to Big Brother, and I loved it because it was bluegrass. She was playing in the coffee houses and the little bars and stuff around San Francisco prior to Big Brother being discovered. And she was going in and jamming because she was, you know, growing up in Port Arthur, she was privy to all the great bluegrass and those songs that were on the other side of just being Big Mama Thornton. And she sounded great. I was so amazed when I heard these recordings.
Bill, thanks so much for stopping by tonight. Pleasure to speak to you, and I hope I get to see you in person soon.
Let's do that. Always enjoy you, Richard.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. That was Bill King, writer, broadcaster, musician, and photographer. Check out his story. Here's to you, Tina and Celine, the Greatest Generation in FYI Music News. When we come back, we're talking history. We're talking Canadian history. We're talking Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit, of course, one of the most famous racehorses of all time. Well, there's a Canadian connection that maybe you don't know about. We'll get to that when we come back. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards on News Talk Tonight.
You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim will be back on Monday. I'm here today. I'm here tomorrow. And then I'm taking the weekend off because I'm jet lagged. Have I mentioned that about 100 times during the show? Anyway, I am. But I'm feeling better after speaking with Dr. Mitch Shulman, who taught me how to kind of deal with it. I promise I won't be this tired tomorrow. It's interesting that we have, it seems to me anyway, have a real interest in looking back over our history. Canadian history is fascinating, and who better to talk with it, talk about it, than Craig Baird, who joins me from CanadianEX.com. Did I say that right, Craig?
Canada EHX.
Yeah, EHX. I thought there was a cool and interesting way to say it, but I guess spelling it just it sounds better on the radio. So there's lots to talk about today. So George Wolfe, born in Alberta on May 31st, 1910. Tell me why he is significant. What do I need to know about him?
Well, as a child, he was pretty involved in rodeos, as many people in Alberta are, from a young age, and he soon started racing horses. So he actually started doing that professionally as a jockey in about 1928, and he raced in Canada, the United States, and Mexico. But he was known as the Iceman because he was very calm before and during races. And from his career from 1928 to 1946, he won 721 times. But his best-known race was in 1938 when he rode Seabiscuit to victory over War Admiral at the Pimlico Special. But then on January 3rd, 1946, he was in a race when he fell from his horse and he suffered a concussion and he passed away the following day. And he's actually a member of the Canada Sports Hall of Fame and the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame.
Wow. George Wolfe, born in Alberta on May 31st, 1910. Let's talk about how Ontario got its name.
Yeah, I always like to find out how places get their names. Mm-hmm. And Ontario, it's been known by many things, from Canada West, Upper Canada, Old Ontario. And the name Ontario kind of has several sources. The Huron word for Great Lake is very similar to the province's name, but there's also the Iroquois word of Scanadorio, which means beautiful water, and that could also be the source of the name. But either way, it's very fitting because Ontario has 250,000 lakes, which is more than any other place on Earth other than Canada itself.
Huh. I did not know that. Wow. That means we probably have more cottages on lakes than anywhere else in the world.
Most likely.
Now, tell me about the Empress of Ireland. What do I need to know about the Empress of Ireland and why is it significant?
This is a really big disaster, but it's not really well known in Canada. So the Empress of Ireland was a ship that was put into service on January 27, 1906, and made 96 crossings across the Atlantic Ocean, taking new immigrants to Canada and visitors to Europe. But then on May 28, 1914, she left Quebec City for Liverpool with 420 crew and 1,057 passengers. So in the very early hours of May 29th, the SS Storstad, which was a Norwegian ship, collided with the Empress in the fog. And initially they were actually stuck together, but the current separated them. And this caused a massive hole in the side of the Empress, and 60,000 gallons of water began rushing in every single second. So even though the Empress actually had more than enough lifeboats because it came 2 years after the sinking of the Titanic, very few people survived because the ship sunk in 14 minutes. Many people didn't even get out of their cabins. And in all, 1,012 people died in the sinking. And it's often known as Canada's Titanic. But again, it's kind of forgotten because the Titanic itself sunk 2 years earlier. And then the First World War broke out just a few months after. So it kind of was in the spot where, you know, it was very famous for a time, but then other big news came along.
I'm speaking about Canadian history with Craig Baird of CanadaEHX.com. It's a great podcast. If you go to the page right now, there's a podcast on the Alberta elections and lots more. How did you get so interested in Canadian history? Were you always a buff and then a history buff and then found your way into Canadian history?
Yeah, I always really liked Canadian history itself. And then I really got into it with the Heritage Minutes and then Canada People's History and Pierre Burton. They kind of all came together to really get me interested.
Yeah, Pierre Burton, those books like The Last Spike and those things, it's very interesting to me when I look back at those because they were... the definitive volumes on their subjects, you know, the Last Railroad, all that sort of thing, and they were bestsellers. People were very interested in that. Now he was a big media star, but I don't know that books of that sort would exactly climb up the bestseller charts today. But there was a time when they did here in this country.
Yeah, and a lot of people know who Pierre Burton is because of his books, and I mean that's pretty rare for a historian.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, when we go to the podcast, what can we expect from it?
Well, this coming Tuesday, I'm going to be talking about Lucile Teasdale Corti, who she was a surgeon, and she spent about 30 to 40 years in Uganda building a hospital before she unfortunately died of AIDS in the 1990s. But she kind of brought a lot of modern medicine to the area and is revered in Uganda for the work that she did.
And so you cover... straight history, that sort of thing. But also, there's a lot of pop culture here. Like Lauren Green, there's a podcast on Lauren Green that you posted about a month ago. Now, people will remember him from Bonanza, but there was a time when he had an acting school in Toronto. He was a voiceover artist who was known as the voice of doom, as I recall. what did you learn about Lauren Green?
Well, actually, what you mentioned was the acting school. I knew that he was the voice of doom and the voice of Canada, but I was really surprised about the acting school where a lot of people got their start, including Leslie Nielsen, who became a lifelong friend to Lauren Green before he passed in, I think it was about 1987.
Yeah, and that was on Jarvis Street, I think, in Toronto. Was it not the acting school?
I believe so, yeah. It only existed for, I think, about 5 or 6 years before it was just losing too much money and he decided to sell it. But everybody who went there, I think it had about a 90% rate of whoever went there had a job in media or broadcasting or acting after they graduated.
Wow. I doubt that there's an acting school anywhere now that has that kind of record. How do you choose the topics that you cover on the podcast?
Well, I scheduled all my topics all the way into... August of next year, and I have 500 episodes already done from previous years. So now it's getting a bit more challenging to find things, but that's the thing, is there's always a story in Canadian history to talk about. And I just kind of, I read a lot of books and people sometimes suggest things. And sometimes I'm just, you know, my interest gets piqued and I go, oh, okay, that'd make a good episode. And, you know, I put it into the schedule and when I eventually get to it, I get it researched and written up.
At what point does something become history? And it sounds like a silly question, but is something that happened 20 years ago old enough for you to do a podcast on it? Or do we not yet have time to have reflection and some distance from it?
Oh, no, I think we do. My general rule is 25 years. I won't cover anything earlier or more recent than 25 years. So the ice storm in 1998 is something I will be talking about this year. Last year, I talked about the Confederation Bridge. The year before that, I talked about the Shawinigan Handshake. So I try and get one relatively recent thing in there. But yeah, I think 25 years.
Yeah, 25 years seems like it's funny when you think back to 25 years, 1998. When I say 1998, it doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but so much water has gone under the bridge since then. I guess that it does give us time to have just enough distance from it that it becomes an historical event.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
Well, Craig, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
What a pleasure to speak to you. That was Craig Baird of CanadaEHX.com. Check out his podcast there if you want to know anything or everything about Canadian history. Craig, thanks so much. When we come back, David Cooper is going to swing by. We're going to play a little game of Would You Rather. Would You Rather is one of those games. Would you rather have this rather than that? And I've done this with him before. It's always unexpected. It's always unusual. They call the segment David Cooper Ruins the Show. And I don't know. Maybe there's a reason for that. We'll find out in the next segment. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim will be back with his own own brand of madness on Monday. But in the meantime, I'm here tonight and tomorrow night. So stay with me. There's lots more to come. David Cooper. And we're also going to do Slow News Day in just a few minutes. Stay with me.
News Talk Tonight continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I like whatever that music was. What was that? They'll do some research and find out for me.
Yeah. Sorry, are you you're with me, Richard?
Yeah, well, no, I'll be with you in just a sec. I was trying to get someone.
Oh, I thought you were asking me. I thought this was like a pre-introduction chat.
No.
And then you were going to, okay, I screwed up the whole thing.
Trying to get someone in that other room to pay attention to me and tell me what that music was, but we'll get to it. It was cool. I'm Richard Krause sitting... I'm Richard Krause sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim Richards will be back on Monday. That other voice that you heard was David Cooper, who's come to ruin the show. David, how are you?
Good. I did a good job. I think I ruined the show right out of the start gate, Richard.
You know what? I've been doing my, as everyone is tired of hearing me say, severely jet-lagged right now, I've been doing a great job of ruining the show all day. So I don't need your help, sir,
well,
to ruin this show.
I am. I'm sure you've already said, but where were you coming from? Why the jet lag?
I've been away a lot lately, and the last couple of weeks I've been in Dublin and in London. And having a great time. I love Dublin. I've always loved London, but Dublin I'd never been to before, and it's a spectacular place.
Yeah, the last time I was there, I was lucky enough to be in Dublin for the 5 minutes a year that there's sunshine in Ireland, and it was gorgeous. Was it sunny while you were there?
It was perfect weather for walking around in, so not particularly summery, but not too cold, not too... It was just sort of just like the Three Little Bears. Well, you know, it was just right. It was just perfect weather. And London, one very hot day. The rest of it was temperate. 12, 14, 15 degrees, something like that, which is fine for me, a little jacket, walk around. My wife loved it, and, you know, from skipping from pub to pub, it was great.
Well, I might end up going there. I'm going to go away for my birthday that's coming in 2 weeks, but we're really on the edge here because my girlfriend, she's American. We're not sure whether she'll get her passport renewed from the, you know, the passport authority here. So we might have to travel in the U.S., but if not, Europe.
Yeah, go to London. Go to London for your birthday. Listen, that's why we were there. I was celebrating my birthday, and it was super fun. So TikTokers say the tipping culture is getting out of hand after a woman claimed that a Ben & Jerry's cashier got annoyed when she didn't tip for a $2 ice cream cone. Here's just a bit of audio that should set this up for us.
Ben and Jerry's yesterday, and I just wanted a cone. Just wanted a nice, fresh, warm cone. So I walk over to the counter, and I was like, hi, can I just have a waffle cone? And she was like, yeah, sure. Here you go. That'll be $2. So I was like, okay. I go to put my card in, and of course, the tipping screen comes up. And I was like, I didn't say this out loud, but in my head, I was like, I'm not tipping you on a cone. You literally just handed me a cone. And I'm also like, the percentages were insane. I was like, I'm not tipping you a dollar on a $2 cone that you just handed me. I'm not. So she hands me my cone. I put my card in. It gives me like, how much do you want to tip? I hit no tip. And the cashier goes to my face, to my actual face. Like, on no planet is that ever appropriate. Even if I got $100 worth of ice cream and I don't tip you, you can't to the customer. On top of that, Miss Girl, what were you expecting? I tipped you to hand me a cone. There wasn't even a service being exchanged. It was an exchange. It was a transaction. It wasn't even an act of service.
All right. So I think the cashier is probably annoyed by the incredibly rapid way that that woman speaks. And that's what made her roll her eyes.
Yeah. When you said TikToker, like this woman's a TikToker, maybe the cashier was just smashing their fists because they were annoyed with her. I don't know. But those machines are sneaky, Richard.
They
like are. When you buy something expensive, they say 20%, 25%, 15%. But when you buy something cheap, 20% is only going to be 20 cents on a dollar. So then it'll suggest, no, tip $2. They're sneaky terminals. But when I heard cone, I thought it was a full cone. She just got, who orders just a cone with no ice cream? That's my question.
Well, that's a confusing part of this story. So you live in New York City. I was just in New York not long ago against, you know, again, because I'm I bugger for punishment, and being in airports is my least favorite thing. So I've been doing it a lot lately. And I found that everywhere I went, no matter what the transaction was, I was being asked to tip on it. And that is something new. Now, for a little while, restaurants were saying, oh, the tipping is on its way out. We're going to just pay all our staff a living wage, and then we won't expect to have people tip anymore. And a number of restaurants here have done it. I know a few restaurants in New York City have done it, but it just seems like everybody else has said, okay, well, now you got to tip on every time you leave the house. And I'm starting to get a little confused by it because I am someone who tips. I worked in the restaurant business for a very long time, but I'm starting to become annoyed that every time I have any kind of transaction, there's a tip option for it.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, we've talked about this before. I've talked about it with Jim. You know, the goodwill of the pandemic when service workers were taking an additional risk, like people were tipping 30%, and that made sense at the time, and the amounts just haven't gone down. But it's not as fair wagey here in New York. I think restaurateurs here are more likely to pay their employees less and then hoping tips will make up the slack. That's the ugly part of capitalism. But on the topic of ice cream, Richard, I don't know if you've heard of this place in New York. It's called Milk. It's like a fancy schmancy dessert place. I think some dessert chef from this restaurant called Momofuku started it. I went there yesterday. I got two
fancy.
Well, you think I got two birthday cake latte flavored soft serves. Okay, fancy flavor, but soft serve with sprinkles. How much do you think that cost, Richard?
Oh, I bet you it was at a minimum, it was $20.
It was $24 after the, I only have 15% because I couldn't bring myself. It's not that I can't afford $24. It's that I simply will not. I will never be going there. I don't even know if it tasted good because I was so blind with rage after they rung me up.
I thought my wife and I were going to get divorced one day when we went into a place on Yonge Street, which is no longer there here in Toronto. And it was a new bakery and a loaf of bread was $16. And I was gobsmacked by it.
Plain loaf or was it like ancient grain sourdough?
Probably something. And here's the thing. You know, I never really know the price of anything exactly. You know, I know when something seems like it's costing too much money. If a quart of milk, whatever, I'm never exactly sure. You couldn't say, like, you paid $2.49 for that. It should have been $2.29 or whatever it might be. I never know that kind of thing. But I do know that if I'm being asked to pay $19 for it, it's way too much money. And I just knew that that was too much money for bread. And it kind of, for some reason, bored its way into my head. And I could not let it go.
Did you start with the people at the cashier? This is the Richard Krause I want to see.
No, I did not. I did not. I decided to suffer in silence. But I just could not imagine that I would ever in my lifetime pay that much money for a loaf of bread.
Another thing I see rising, Richard, guacamole. I don't know if it's the prices of avocados, but I was at a restaurant the other day, and it was a Mexican place, and everything was pretty reasonable, like mid-range. $20 for guacamole. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Yeah. See, that used to be the free stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think avocados are worth that much. They're just like, they're tasteless. They're just like mush. They're the baby food of vegetables.
This nature's mayonnaise. So I wonder, you know, if it's just post-pandemic, restaurants are just having a rough time, you know, breaking even, trying to make up for that, you know, few years in New York. I guess it was a couple of years where they were told they could open, they could close, they open, they could close. And you just got to make money somehow.
I mean, maybe, but a lot of places did shut down, did go out of business. My neighborhood in particular was completely boarded up in 2021, and now there's not a single for rent sign. All new places, all asking for 25% tips. So I'm not so sure. I think things are back in the restaurant industry, at least here.
It's interesting. Last time in New York recently, I found that restaurants that used to be open for lunch no longer open for lunch. Bars that used to open in the morning, you know, for those 11 a.m. drinks that you have on vacation weren't opening till 5 because I was told that you can't find staff. Nobody wants to work in restaurants in that city right now.
I guess that's it. Anyway, Richard, I promise I won't be offended. You didn't call me when you were here, okay? I promise.
Okay, next time I will. David, hang on. We're out of time for this segment, but David Cooper is going to continue to ruin this broadcast. When we come back, we're going to play Would You Rather and probably talk about other random things. Stay with me. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Network on News Talk Tonight. Stay with me. Lots more to come.
News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. I'm here tonight. I'm here Friday, and then I'm taking the weekend off. But Jim will be back on Monday with lots more of his unique brand of chaos. David Cooper joins me now to ruin the show a little bit more. And David Cooper, I'm told that I'm supposed to ask you what that music is because it's your music.
Oh, I just, I used to host overnights here on the iHeartRadio Talk
Network. I used to be on that show with you.
You did. Yes. I had the reins, and you were my serious guest, and now I'm your just stupid guest. But, I wanted to pick some theme music, and I really like that track. It's a Frank Zappa track off of The Man from Utopia. It's called We Are Not Alone. And it's really funky. It's got like parts that are 4/4, 6/4, 5/4. Yeah. It's kind of just as when you think you understand that song, it changes on you. So it's a track I like, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm never a huge Frank Zappa fan, but I saw him play live once, and he had an enormous band. It was at Maple Leaf Gardens. He had an enormous band, and I think I'm remembering this correctly, but he had these television screens around him. That I think had probably images flickering throughout the show. I don't think that they were, you know, those big screens that bands use nowadays. I think that they just had newscasts and things on them. And then at one point, a green slime started to pour out of them.
Like actual green slime?
Slime, yeah.
I mean, the man was very creative. He was a champion for free speech in the U.S. against censorship. When the record labels were trying to get legislation in to censor, he basically helped prevent that and testified in front of Congress. His body of work is incomprehensible. It is so extensive. He put out about 1 billion records, give or take 1 billion. But yeah, he's just one of my favorite artists, and he's very strange. A big fan.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, whichever one wasn't Keanu, I don't remember whether he was Bill or Ted, the other one was Alex Frost, and he's a director now, and he made a great movie about Frank Zappa.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
It's really worth a look. It's really worth a look, and it'll give you the full width and breadth of Frank Zappa's career, and from everything from the GTOs, the Girls Together Outrageously, all that stuff in the 60s, and, you know, Wild Man Fisher, and all the stuff that he recorded that is just so out there, up to the orchestral music he was making at the end of his life. It's quite incredible.
I'm going to give this a watch, and I'll just say this, my favorite Frank Zappa track, or fact rather, what is it? Deep Purple was at a Frank Zappa gig in Montreux in Switzerland, and the casino caught fire, and there was smoke all over the lake there, and that is the basis for the song "Smoke on the Water." I think I got that 90% right.
Frank Zappa and the Mothers. I had the best players in town. Yeah, something like that. "Smoke on the Water." All right. Would you rather? This is the game we're going to play. We're going to bring in Tony Tedesco, who is going to, I guess, moderate, and then we are going to speak gibberish after he asks us questions.
Love it.
All right, gentlemen, here we go for David and Richard. Would you rather always have a full charge on your phone or a full tank of gas or, get this, a full charge on your car? There we go. Ooh. It is 2023 after all.
Do I get to have an electric car if I choose full charge, or I got to pay for the car?
You'd have to pay for it. We are not giving. We are not doing giveaways. Nope.
My motorcycle tank holds a lot of gas. I'll take the phone. Why not? I'll take the phone.
Well, I don't drive, so there's that. But even if I did, I'm like weirdly obsessive about keeping my phone charged up because, frankly, I don't have anywhere to go. And if I do decide I want to go somewhere, I'll just enjoy it by surfing the net and looking at pictures of places I'd rather be. But you need to have a full charge to do that. That's my.
You do.
Yeah. Full charge.
Have you heard
for
of
me.
This thing, rage anxiety? range anxiety, Richard, for drivers of electric cars?
Absolutely. And this is something that's really real. And I've been in a bunch of electric cars lately because we've been on the road and that. And I've talked to the drivers of them in Europe. There, you don't see very many Teslas, but there's electric cars everywhere, particularly in England. And that's what they were all telling me. They were saying, you know, from city driving, it's okay. Once you get out of the city, it's a little trickier because there simply aren't that many places to charge.
Yeah, but I think for some people, like if they were in a car and had a quarter tank left, they'd be fine. And if they were in an electric car, even if there was a charging station, they panic, they freak out. It seems to be a phenomenon unique to electric cars.
Well, it's 2023 and we need new anxieties every week or, you know, it wouldn't be 2023 anymore.
Well, now I'm anxious about what my next anxiety is going to be. All right, Tony, let's get the next one.
Well, I like this one since Richard is jet lagged, so he's going to want to probably weigh in on this one. Would you rather have more pillows or more blankets tonight when you finally go sleepy sleep, Richard?
Well, there will be pillows. No, we're just talking about more pillows, right? Is that what you're going to say?
Would you rather have more pillows or more blankets?
More blankets. I am a very finicky sleeper. I do not move very much when I sleep, but I have to have the blankets positioned perfectly so that I am mostly covered, but little bits of my body are sticking out for temperature control. And I know the formula. I know how it works. My wife, after 20 years, still does not quite understand how it works. And when she wears like flannel pajamas and she moves around a lot, constantly ripping the blankets off me. So give me more blankets so I can have independent blankets for my temperature control.
Well, there's two things, Richard. You know, in some European countries, even if you're on a queen bed with your boothang, your wife, your girlfriend, your husband, they have separate single comforters each.
I know.
And then the second thing is, have you tried linen sheets? I never have, but I hear it's good for temperature control.
I have not tried those, but I will. I've got a lifetime of figuring out my temperature control, so I don't know. Maybe linen.
Okay.
What's next, Tony?
Actually, I was going to go to David Cooper. Do you like the fluffy pillows, or would you rather have more blankets?
Fluffy pillows.
Really?
I'm affectionately referred to by my girlfriend as the pillow king, Richard. I got one between the legs, one over the head.
See, I've tried the one between the legs, and it always just it just never stays there. So I don't see the point.
I need it. Otherwise, there's too much squishing going on. Next question.
Body pillow for Tony T, by the way. Would you rather, and this is terrible, have no taste or be colorblind? No taste or be colorblind?
I am slightly colorblind, and it doesn't really seem to have affected my life that much, so I'm going to go colorblind.
Like no taste as in the things that I like or are really
no taste of anything.
Like your Frank Zappa collection,
I like seeing color, but I like eating a lot. I'm going to say colorblind. I prefer,
All right, let's move to, would you rather be born again in the same country or a different one you know nothing about? Born again in a different country you know nothing about.
Would I be aware of the fact that I had been previously lived somewhere else and I was being reborn in another country? Would I have memories of the last country?
You might, maybe. No, you wouldn't have any memories.
Because that would
we're
be
just
torturous.
Asking you. Yeah, okay. We're just asking you, if you were to be born again tomorrow, would you rather be born here again? Or would you rather be born in a country you know nothing about?
Only because I'm jet lagged, I'm going to say in this country, because I'm tired of the travel, even though it's not, you know, really traveling.
I live abroad, but I'm a proud Canadian, so I'd be born again in the same country.
We are out of time. David Cooper, thanks for ruining the show.
Thanks, Richard.
I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards. Stay with me. Lots more to come.
Listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
That's another good song to come back with. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Jim will be in on Monday. I'm in tomorrow night. And it's been a really fun show so far. I hope you liked it. I'm a little rocky, I think, because, as I've said, it's the jet lag edition, and I'm starting to really feel the burn right about now. But we're getting through it, and it's been fun. It's always fun sitting in this chair, always fun doing this, and I'm happy when Jim gives me the chance to do this. So happy to be here. This is News Talk Tonight, and it's time for Slow News Day with Tony Tedesco. Tony.
Well, let's start with this story, a little bit of an update. The other night on Slow News Day, we reported about a viral video of a man who broke into a cupcake shop in Vancouver and then cleaned up after himself, swept up the glass from the door he broke, he took some selfies, and then he left with his six cupcakes in hand.
Kicked the door in, walked around, sat down for, you know, quite a long time. He realized, I guess, that he had made a mess, and he grabs a mop and a mop bucket and goes to try to, like, clean up all of the glass from the door that he kicked in. After he's cleaned up as much as he can, he walks out with six cupcakes and goes on his way. And, you know, it turned it from this, like, kind of not so great experience to some of the best laughs I've ever had. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up.
Well, I'm glad she got a laugh out of it.
Well, the man who stole the cupcakes from Vancouver's, the place is called Sweet Something, he's back. Only this time, he's profusely apologizing. He's offering to pay for the broken glass door and also promised to give the bakery owner the orange sunglasses he wore during the heist and while he was taking all those selfies. Here's the update from the bakery owner, Emma Irvine.
It went from this heart-sinking feeling to a good old laugh because of what we saw on that video.
Are you going to press charges against the guy?
We've asked the police not to. He, like, profusely apologized. He was really, really nice. Has offered to pay for the door, offered to pay for the cupcakes.
The guy, I mean, let's be real here. The guy is a thief and a criminal. But it sounds like he was genuinely remorseful. So I'm laughing about it. I probably shouldn't be. I'd be mad if I came in and found my store's door had been kicked in and that kind of thing. But listen, give me a pair of orange sunglasses and maybe that'll turn my frown upside down.
There you go. A Maryland man who worked as a garbage man as he made his way through classes at the University of Maryland has graduated from Harvard Law School. Here's Rahan Staton talking about his journey through law school and graduating.
Just different types of poverty, right? There was like housing insecurities, food insecurities. A lot of times we didn't really know like where we were going to be able to keep our home. There will be some days in which I just didn't have time to get to the shower and just change my clothes. And so I would kind of sit off to the side because of how I was dressed. And that was very uncomfortable, but we made it work. It's nice to be able to say that we finished this. Things are on an upward trajectory. We made people smile through it. I'm just excited.
That's a great story. I love an underdog story. I like a story of resilience. I like a story that is uplifting in this way. I think that so often we concentrate on what's wrong and what will never be fixed. And here's an example of a guy, Rahan Staton, who fixed his life and did it in kind of an interesting and inspiring way. I'm all about this.
Burglars in Washington State used wetsuits and kayaks as getaway vehicles after they burglarized a home last week. The house was occupied at the time, and they stole $20,000 in cash.
What?
Here is Judy Bushnell, a resident of the neighborhood, talking about the crime.
It's just a sad commentary, I think, on trying to feel safe in an environment where you have felt safe in the past and finding out that actually someone is now trying to make you feel very unsafe.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever had your house broken into. Have you been robbed?
I've never been, not in my home, no. I've never had my home broken into.
Yeah, I had my apartment broken into years ago, years and years and years ago. And it's just an icky feeling. This is one of those things that as this woman says, you just sort of feel violated. It's supposed to be your place, your safe place, the place with all your stuff. And the thing is, they didn't really take anything. They broke in. They left, you know, this is how long ago. They left the stereo and they left, you know, the those things. And they took a little bits of jewelry and things that were kicking around, stuff that I guess that they could sell fairly easily. But nonetheless, just the idea that somebody had been in the house just, you know, made my skin crawl.
I can't imagine being violated in that way. Like, just knowing that some stranger was in your house and, if you had been home, could have hurt you. Like, we're going to go to the next story here. A bus driver and passenger had a wild shootout in North Carolina after an argument over whether the passenger could get off the bus or not. Bus driver David Fullard was fired after the incident, and Omari Tobias was charged with assault with a deadly weapon. Here is the moment the two exchanged gunfire. Yeah, we might play gunfire here.
Yeah, we on never the radio. Do. Yeah, do so not, just be,
yeah, yeah, just be. This is. These are not real shots. And also commentary from the CEO of the bus company.
If we know that someone is in possession of a weapon on our vehicles, we report that and ask for support.
How many gunshots was that? I don't know. Don't play it again. But it was a lot of gunshots over a dispute as to whether or not you could get off the bus early or not.
Like, can I get off the bus between stops and it turns into a gun shootout?
I mean, there's just been more and more and more of these kind of stories where, you know, it starts off with someone that wants extra sauce on their, you know, Big Mac, and all of a sudden it's a gun battle when they can't get it. I do think that the pandemic has loosened something in a lot of people. It has unleashed something in a lot of people that is not pointing us in a particularly healthy direction. And I wish that I could say, well, and this is what we can do to fix it. But I don't know. I mean, that was 8 or 10 gunshots over a dispute on a bus as to whether or not you can get off early or not. Unbelievable.
Absolutely. We're going to head to Florida for a couple of stories. A Florida man was arrested after allegedly stealing not one, but two police vehicles during a multi-county chase. After being stopped once, Xavier Jarvin Cummings was able to run into a second police vehicle and continue the chase.
You have to really want to get away if you're going to steal a second cop car to continue. Wow.
10-3, someone just hit him into the woods.
We get called that, hey, they're chasing a stolen police vehicle, and it's headed into your county.
He's on the move again in a Coco K9 Explorer going north on 95.
And now we continue the chase for another probably 8 or 10 miles. Eventually, he drives into the median, where a group of us are able to get up there and get him out of the car.
Wow, that is... like just a ridiculous story, because you're going to get, I don't know if you're going to get in twice as much trouble for stealing that second car, but it's not going to be great for you.
It's like the video game Grand Theft Auto comes to life,
totally.
Right?
Yeah.
One more Florida story. Okay. Riza Baluchi attempted and failed for the third time to run across the ocean in what can only be described as a floating hamster wheel. Here is Baluchi and his friend Gina talking about what happened.
Anything you want, do it. No listen to anybody. You chasing your dream. My goal is raise money, not just for homeless people. Raise money for Coast Guard. Raise money for police department.
He's a survivalist. He can survive anywhere for days, weeks. He's got everything he needs to keep him safe.
Okay, I have to choose my favorite of all these stories.
Yeah.
I think that it's got to be that last one, only because he's trying to go across the ocean on a floating hamster wheel because that's his dream. If you got to have a dream, that may as well be it. So I'm going to say, what's his name? Xavier Baluchi. He's the winner for me.
For me, it's got to be the TikTok cleaner-upper guy.
Yeah,
stole
that's
some
pretty
muffins.
Awesome,
that
too.
Guy was definitely needing muffins that one night and was willing to do anything to get them. So, but the fact that he, you know, came back and offered to pay, cool.
Thanks, Tony. The Rundown's next with Mark Mendelsohn and Carmi Assad. Stay with me.